And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in the clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on podcastufo.com. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host, and Alejandro Rojas is coming right up with the UFO updates in just 1 minute. Our guest this evening is Albert Rosales, and he has some interesting research that he's done of people actually seeing a weird, like, humanoid-like beings. It's really, I've been reading one of his books. It is pretty fascinating, and he goes right into documenting them and the source. Very interesting. Should be a fun show tonight. Thank you, supporters, for supporting the show. And if you'd like to help us out for $2 or more a month, you can just go to podcastufo.com, and right on the top menu bar, all that information's right there. We are streaming live on YouTube, and that's been real engaging for the chat room. It's been real nice, and anyone can watch that. And that's on right on our homepage or on YouTube, and there's the chat room is also on our homepage. We also have our show coming up on Monday. That's the Everything Else show. Next week coming up is about Fukushima and basically the nuclear hot seat. So that'll be an interesting show, I believe. Anyway, I think we are ready to get going. Alejandro, how are you?
Good. How are you, my friend?
I am doing pretty good despite a few setbacks. You know, I just got to stay off ladders and stuff. That's all I'm going to say. I don't really want to get into it, but, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just can't.
I want you to stay off ladders, too.
Yeah. But doing good. Glad to be here, actually. And so what is happening in the news this week?
Well, I don't know if you've noticed this, but our award to Tom DeLonge at the conference, we talked about that last week, I'm sure, has gone viral.
Ooh.
So I counted like something like 27 sites that wrote about it today. The biggest being CNET, but I think it was New York Daily News wrote about it. So it's all over the place.
Excellent.
Now, CNET, yeah, it, which is good and bad. good because you know, CNET wrote about it, and they have a great article. It's just straightforward, giving the information for the most part. But most of the sites are making fun of Tom DeLonge. But it's a bit frustrating because they're not talking about the content of what he did, which I think is so important. You know, they're not really talking about how he talked with Podesta and these generals and everything. They're just kind of making fun of him. We're talking about UFOs, and they may be just fast-forwarding through our video and the part about why we gave him the award and just looking at what he said, because they're also kind of making fun of him for staying up at night and reading UFO books and all of this sort of thing. So it's good because it gets exposure, I guess, to all of this stuff and to the Congress, but it's bad in that most of them aren't taking it too seriously.
That is too bad. After I watched your video, which I highly recommend, it's also on my sidebar, anyone can watch it. I watched the Larry King with Tom DeLonge, James Fox, and Michael Shermer. And that is pretty interesting. So this goes all the way back to 2014 when he was talking about UFOs. And yes, he really is, you know, he was talking about starting out in the seventh grade and, you know, his reading habits, reading everything he can find on it. He really is into the topic. You know, what I took from your video, and I encourage the listener to check it out, is that he is claiming to be coming out with a message in a short period of time that is going to be pretty important. You know, I mean, it's got us, you know, I'm curious to what it is, but, you know, he seems to think that it's going to be a big deal, whatever that message is.
And I guess, you know, I have a little bit of insight, not a whole lot. You guys will have what I have in just a second here. But essentially, he's saying, from what I understand from people close to him and his people, is that it won't be him alone saying stuff, that it will be, I guess, some credible people will be coming out about something. I don't know what. And so people will say, well, why are we going to believe him? Well, I guess it won't be just a matter of believing him.
Wow. Interesting. Well, we'll see. Yeah. I mean, I sure hope I don't miss it when things happen.
No, I'm sure you won't. But people, the other thing, some people have been critical. Why him? They assume that we chose him because he's a rock star. But that is not the case. And I think I said this before. I feel, you know, it's a big deal. Like you said, he's been doing this for quite some time. He has been researching and looking for stuff, and he will be sharing actual research. And I've asked other people this, and no one's giving me an answer, is in the last year, you know, who else has done something really significant in this field? And I can't think of anyone. And really, when you think about how significant what he did, especially with that meeting with these generals and John Podesta and this guy from Skunk Works, nobody in ufology has ever put together or been part of a meeting like that at all. No right. UFO researcher, period, ever. So it's significant not just for this year, but it's significant for the field overall. And so that's why, in my humble opinion, and some may disagree, the award was well deserved. So some people said, well, why is it going to a rock star and not a UFO researcher who's devoted their life to it? Well, because none of them did anything that significant this year. One, two, you know, it's almost even look at all of the heat that Tom DeLonge is taking. Like in these stories that I mentioned, some of them are really making fun of him. And and so he's taking all of this, you know, ridicule when he didn't have to.
Yeah. I hope that doesn't discourage him.
And I know. Me too, because it does discourage a lot of people. You know people who it discourages, even myself. You know, sometimes I think, why do I do this? People are such jerks. So I hope he doesn't get discouraged as well.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't question his intentions. I don't think he's doing it. I think he's doing it out of passion. That's what I'm getting from the more I look into what he's doing. I don't think he's doing it out for any other reason, and certainly, you know, he's got to worry about what people think about him if he does. But one of the messages that he has is to get the information out to young people. And I think he's a really good tool for that because of his, you know, his celebrity stance. So I think, you know, I just wish all the good for him.
Yeah, me too. So, they should be sharing some stuff with us soon, at least giving us discount codes and stuff so people can get his new nonfiction book that's coming out soon at a discount. So I'll let you know next week. Hopefully we have something by then.
All right. So what else is happening in the world of UFOs?
What else is happening in the world of UFOs? Well, we've got a couple things going on. Roger has been diligently writing for us for MUFON. And this is kind of interesting. I don't know if you watched this video from North Carolina that we posted.
No, I was just going on your site earlier today, though I didn't catch that video. But I mean, I do see it, but I didn't get a chance to watch it.
Mm-hmm. The witness says, the title is North Carolina Witness Unsure, UFO or Drone. And if you watch the video, you do see kind of this white object up in the sky. I guess it could be some sort of debris. It looks like it's moving. And it doesn't look like a drone, and it's really high. In fact, someone commented in our comments saying, I use drones all the time, and this is way too high to be a drone. So this person didn't feel it was a drone. It doesn't look like a plane. I guess it could be a reflection, but it seems smaller than what a plane would look like. So it doesn't do anything extraordinary. It's just a white kind of object kind of floating around up there and kind of at an angle. So it is an interesting video. This person said that they shot the video from their cell phone. It was in front of their house. It was a sunny afternoon at about 4:30 p.m. on April 2nd, 2016, so nearly a year ago. He says he's near a lake and a river, so they're used to seeing large birds like herons, but he doesn't think this is a bird. And I don't see any flapping, so I'm not quite sure if it's a bird either. They also said it could have been a drone because, you know, it moved sort of slowly, but it's pretty large. So, yeah, people mm-hmm. have to take a look and see what they think.
Yeah, it's sort of an odd shape, too. You know, it's not something that you'd think a drone would be shaped like, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, I agree. So that's a weird one. Another weird one that was posted by Roger just yesterday was this Pennsylvania witness reporting an unusual lights beaming to the ground. So this person who says they sleep pretty heavily was woken up a couple times recently. The first one was about 1:30 a.m. and this was recently.
November 15th.
Yeah, there you go. November 15th. So this one's kind of funny. Woken up by the dog because the dog seemed to be freaking out, and there were beams of lights in her backyard, and the dog was barking. She couldn't figure out what it was, and there was some sort of large light that this seemed to come from, a huge, bright, round light. So this happened again a few days later, or actually in January, where woken up in the middle of the night and these lights were beaming in the backyard. So then the witness noticed that they had been bitten by something, presumably the dog. So the dog must have been freaked out enough that the dog bit its owner to wake her up. And so, yeah, kind of a weird story outside of Philadelphia.
Yeah, it really is. There's a nice graphic with that, too. It's too bad. I mean, she just didn't think to get it, get it filmed or pictures or something. But, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that graphic, I made that a while ago, and I've used it a few times. It is actually a depiction of, like, Rendlesham if you were in the forest at some point. That's mm-hmm. what that originally I made that for, but it works for this because it shows a big round white light beaming a beam down to the ground. And of course we hear these stories in Rendlesham, also, you know, Lee Spiegel's sighting and others where, you know, these objects mm-hmm. beam a light down at people. So very strange stuff, I would say.
And also, I was talking earlier about our guest this evening, Albert Rosales, who wrote one of the books he wrote was early sightings from 1 AD to, I can't remember exactly when, but somewhere in ancient, you know, history, there's a talk about a white ball beaming down lights. So this is probably nothing new.
Yeah, maybe. I'm trying to think of some ancient story that was in, but I don't have any. But, yeah, who knows? They could have been flying around quite a bit, beaming people's feet for some reason.
You know,
it's kind of funny because someone posted a story, and I've thought about this before, too. What if we found a planet and the planet was more primitive than we are?
Mm-hmm.
And it's – what would we do? And I think what we would do is we probably would observe them. And if they were very primitive compared to us, we might even, you know, kidnap one or abduct one and check it out and then put it back. Or if the scientists were more unscrupulous, which is possible. I hope they'd be wiser than this. They might even take one and cut it up just to check it out. So, I mean, it's just funny to think about it from that perspective, especially when we get closer and closer to be able to send vehicles to great distances, like the Breakthrough initiative, where they want to send these little parasails. Mini things to the nearby solar systems to check them out.
If we're going to, cut anything up, we should mutilate one of their cows if they have any.
Yeah, we may just do that. May think, well, we can't mutilate the people, so let's mutilate one of these creatures that they eat.
Now, this is really an interesting, I would really like to get into this topic because it's really fascinating to me. And, I think about, would we present ourselves, a lot of people say, well, why don't, if they are UFOs and they are, visiting us, why don't they present themselves? What would we do? Would we want to, disturb their culture and everything by saying, hey, we're from another planet and they're, they don't even know what a planet is or,
And if they were primitive enough, we wouldn't even bother because we wouldn't see the need, I don't think, especially mm-hmm. if they didn't even have their own language. They just kind of grunted. We wouldn't necessarily have a need to share any information, nor would we necessarily know how. So, it is kind of funny because even in today's world, if we were to come across a primitive culture, we would probably treat them much the same way people report, being treated by extraterrestrials, namely abductees. It's kind of funny that people think it's kind of far-fetched, the abduction stories, but there are so many people that say they're having these experiences. And what they're reporting being done to them is probably what we would do to a civilization that we ran across. So, it's interesting to think about, I think.
Yeah. But also another thing I know that I always do it, or I have to always stop myself, is thinking that they would think in the way that we think.
Mm-hmm. Right. Good point.
Yeah. We don't even know what their philosophies are or evolutions or anything. But
I like to say, with humans, there's often many humans where we don't know why they do what they do. So it would make sense we wouldn't understand, necessarily what the motivations would be for an extraterrestrial civilization.
Right. Righto. All right. Well, hey, we went a little bit over, but that was cool. It's been a great discussion, as always.
All right. Well, wonderful to talk to you again, my friend, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Okay, thanks a lot. Hang in, everyone. We'll be right back after this quick music with our guest, Albert. Albert, how are you?
Hello, I'm here. How are you?
Good. You remember to unmute your mic.
Yes.
How are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes. I started reading one of your books. I thought it was actually really fascinating. It looks like you go into some really deep detail. You source your witness accounts and things like that. First of all, let's talk a little bit about you. Who are you, and what got you interested in this topic in the beginning?
Well, I had my own experiences myself when I was a kid. I was born in Cuba. I'm migrated to the United States back in 1966. And when I was a child in Cuba, I had a couple experiences that back then I couldn't relate to what they were, to UFOs. I'll mention one. I was sitting outside with my parents and some other neighbors, and suddenly something flew across the street that looked like a big egg with lights, and no one knew what it was. Somebody yelled out it was the Yankees, the Americans, okay? Because, back in the Cold War. Anyway, the thing flew over the house. I ran back to the backyard and it hovered. I stood under it for a while, and before I knew it, it was gone. And it was late, and that's it. I I didn't remember seeing it leave. And then after that, we lived in Spain for a little bit and came to the U.S. For some reason, I was always attracted to weird stuff, phenomena, not UFOs directly, but different stuff, you know. I started reading a lot about the Devil's Triangle, all the early books that came out on UFOs. And then I joined the Navy. And back then I was, 19, maybe 18. And that was in 77. And back then they published a UFO magazine called Saga UFO Report. I don't know if you remember that. Yeah. And I was subscribed to it. And I got the magazine up in Great Lakes in Chicago. And they called me in to the naval chief, chief petty officer, as you say. And they called me in the office, and they want to know why did I like to read this subject, and you know, about the subject, and a little interrogation there, which I thought it was kind of funny, and they prohibited me from receiving that magazine again at the Great Lakes. But anyway, after that, I've been working law enforcement now for over 32 years, local. I'm already retired soon, hopefully, and. For some time now, I've been compiling an anthology of encounters with UFOs and mostly entities, or what they call humanoids, from all over the world. I gather material from published sources over the internet. People contact me. Researchers send me material from other countries. I translate a lot of it, exchange material, and I have. Compiled now over almost 19,000. I have summarized almost 19,000 cases, mostly involving encounters with all types of humanoids, all types.
Wow.
And other type of incidents too. Okay. I have 15 volumes published already.
All right, I'm hearing a tapping. Just to let you know,
that was my foot. I'm sorry.
Okay. 15 okay. Volumes. That's
yes.
That's amazing. And the one you sent me is your latest one, and that goes 1 AD forward to...
Well, it actually goes before 1 AD, but the publisher thought I should put 1 AD, because. Yeah. But it goes before that, and it goes up to 1 AD to, I believe, 1899? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right. So yeah. This is kind of fascinating, because you're getting material. It's not just from the internet. Are you getting, I was thinking there's probably so many early books, especially all through Europe. I'm sure there's a lot of accounts which will never hit the internet, you know?
Oh, no. Yeah, there's a lot of material there that I have gotten from researchers, let's say from Poland, Finland, Spain, and these cases you'll never read about them anywhere else. And many of the Spanish cases, since I speak Spanish, I could translate it myself. Now, I had another researcher from Ukraine, and he sent me a lot of material too. He helped me translate a lot of the cases. But there's cases there from all over the place. Currently, I'm translating a couple of books right now, like this one from Mexico. And there's, like, every day I enter new cases into my database.
I see. Okay. Someone's trying to make a call. Unfortunately, it's not allowing me to add the call to this, which would just basically hang up on our guests. So okay. Sorry. We'll just keep continuing here. In the accounts that you're reading, I noticed a lot of them had sort of like religious connotations. Do you think that's just how people interpreted them, what they were seeing at the time?
I think so. A lot of the so-called Marian apparitions, or the Virgin Mary apparitions back in the, especially the one in the early 18th century, 19th century, the Fatima in Portugal. Some of these beings act very similar to modern day accounts of humanoids and supposedly extraterrestrials, like some of the being seen at in Portugal back in 1917 and 16, from 1915 to 1917, were similar to modern-day descriptions of humanoids. I'm not talking about the small grays with the big eyes, the grays are seem to be like a new latecomers to ufology. I call them latecomers anyway. But a lot of those, there's definitely a relationship between the Marian apparitions or the Virgin Mary apparitions and UFOs.
Right, right.
I believe
seems to be quite quite a bit. And what I was just reading today in your book, there were a number of them that related to that. So were there ever any through all the beings you looked, through information on, were there any like unusually sized, like really large or really small, beings that people, I didn't see any so far, and I just wondered about that.
In that early book, the one from, you don't see too many variants on humanoids there, because this is our from cases from back in the, 1500s, 1400s, 1300s, and they interpreted things different, but in later years, we have humanoids of all sizes. You had the tiny ones seen in Malaysia back in the 70s. I was sent an account from Spain from 2014, from directly to me by the witness. Him and some friends, they encountered a humanoid that was, he said it was well over 5 meters tall. Tall, wow. Dark
figure.
It's like
15 feet or close to 15 feet. Yeah,
a little more than that. So we have all sizes, the description of all sizes.
Wow. And what is some of the really unusual ones? I mean, I was reading today where they saw them dressed when looked like glass and, all different types of weird stuff. And people that are green and they lose their green color later in life and,
believe it or not, there's been reports of little green men, which everybody makes fun of. But there's been people that claim they've seen. And we're talking about cases that have been investigated by the different researchers, not people that come on in the internet and send you the account, or the case. There's many cases. One that really interests me are when the people encounter different type of humanoids apparently working together, either inside the ship if they've been abducted or next to the ship. I know a case in France, which is I always found it fascinating, with a couple that were parked in a wooded area. Now we're out there necking, I believe, and they saw an object land nearby, a big dome-shaped thing. It landed, a hatch, a big doorway became visible. And first, there was like three or four little, or the small size humanoids come out. Not exactly grays. They had the large head, but their eyes were more human-like. And after that, two tall figures came out, and these two figures were like tall, blonde hair. Long blonde hair, silver outfits, and these were like the what you will call the nowadays Nordic type entities. Mm-hmm. Now the most interesting part, after these two came out, another figure came out to the door and stood there. They thought it was standing there either a guard or just standing watch. He said he looked like a big hairy ape, okay, and it just sat there by the door of the object. And now this case is interesting. After these, they left. They went back the same way they came out. They went back into the ship and then took off. Now at a nearby farm, the farmer and his daughters heard noises and saw lights. And after that, they found some footprints in their yard that were different sizes. Which the researcher that sent the case think it was directly related to the incident.
Wow, that's strange.
Independent confirmation there.
Yeah. Has your later books ever kind of delved into other types of cryptoids besides the humanoids, or do you try to stay? I saw a couple of things like that, but do you try to stay mostly with what people are claiming are humanoids?
I try to stay within the humanoid aspect of the matter. I do include a lot of the Bigfoot-type encounters, especially if they're like the more interesting encounters, which involved Bigfoot that able to either have to speak telepathically to the witness, or Bigfoot-type creatures that vanish, or they're shot at and nothing happens to them, or they disappear in a ball of light. There's many cases like that. And I include a lot of the other entities, like little people, fairies, mermaids, centaurs, the wolfman, a lot of these cases. I can't include all of them, but it's already, this is like a chronology of over, like I said, 19,000 cases.
Wow.
Which not all of them I could include in the book. There'd be just too many of them in the books.
Wow. Interesting. Hey, we are, Albert, we're having a problem with buffering on YouTube for some reason, and my internet signal is really strong, so I can't understand it. So I would like to shut your, go ahead and shut your camera off, if you would, please. I'm just going to try to do that on this end.
Shut it off? Okay.
Yeah, shut your camera right off. And I'm going to just try to do a couple things on this end, and we'll continue. You can go ahead and continue talking, though. I'd like to, I almost want to start out by asking you what's the weirdest thing that anyone said, but it seems like there's so many weird things. So why don't you go into some of the kind of really strange ones that people have talked about?
Let me. I was preparing some of them that were sent directly to me by the witnesses, and I'll find some for you guys now. These are like people that I spoke to over the phone, or they were mostly in communication with me, mostly in email or phone communication. I have met witnesses only in my local area, which I have been able to investigate. Let me bring up this file here.
In your local area, really?
Wow. Yeah, I have some cases here, which several. Some of them including supposedly abductions and stuff. Here, I'm here in Miami, South Miami.
Oh, you're in Miami. Okay.
Yeah. Here's one, an interesting case that was sent to me directly by a witness from Connecticut, a place called Naugatuck, N-A-U-G-A-T-U-K. Back in 1970, she was a six-year-old girl, young, and one night she woke up all of a sudden. She was hearing her name being called, and you know she got up, and for some reason she felt compelled to go to the front door. And she knew, for some reason, she knew that she had to go outside and meet somebody. It was funny. She had a little box that she carried with her, like a suitcase, and she packed it and walked out with some socks and panties. She walked downstairs and through the front door. And this is a funny thing. She said she walked through the front door. She did not open. And she didn't think at the time that that was a strange thing. They just thought it was, you know, just walk through the door. She said she walked down the driveway and turned right and walked up and with her head down, and all of a sudden she came up to a big pair of feet, she says, attached to some legs. She looked up, and there was a figure of a man. It was, she said, it to her, it looked like a giant silver man made out of silver, shiny. And she knew there was no danger. Somehow she knew that. I mean, she looked at it, and he had no clear features or anything like that. So this is when she asked the entity, whatever it was. She goes, "Are you God?" And she thought it was God. Maybe a little girl. She couldn't think of anything else. She said that the entity laughed. She heard her laughter in a warm, amused way, and then responded, "No, child, I'm not God, and you can't stay here." Told him she couldn't stay there. He then turned her around and swatted her gently on her behind and told her, again, "You must go home, Kathy." He added before she left, "It's not time." Hmm. Obediently, she turned around and marched right back home and went inside her house in the same manner that she had, exited, right through the door and back into her bed. You know, I always found that case, you know, very interesting, amusing. I wish I could have met the witness in person, but Connecticut, I'm here in Miami. Sometimes I don't have the time, you know, but to go in person. But I found it very an intelligent person and reliable.
Right. Wow. So, And have you, besides these people here, have you gone so far as to actually interview people, like, say, by phone or Skype or something like that, to get someone's account? And has that ever been an option for you?
Oh, yeah. I've done a lot of phone interviews. I've done a lot of local cases. Back in the 1990s, 96, 95, when they had the Chupacabra craze that originated in Puerto Rico, and somehow we started getting cases here in South Florida. I actually went out to a couple locations with the late researcher, Virgilio Sanchez Osejo. He passed away last year. Anyway, we went to a location where I spoke to it was like a nursing home, and they had a big yard with some animals. They had some goats there. And they found some of the goats dead. They had, like, holes on their necks. And one of the ladies that was looking out the window at night claimed she saw some kind of a creature outside. And the creature was like a bipedal creature. Didn't appear to have any clothing. And she looked at it, and it jumped the fence and vanished. Now, I was there, and I saw one of the dead goats. Now, the funny thing, the goat had a couple of holes in the neck. I bent down, I touched it, I don't know why, and then something started leaking out of the hole. It looked like green fluid. Oh. It wasn't blood, it was something green. I've never seen it before. Now, me and Virgilio, we never thought of picking up the carcass or doing anything with it. Somebody else came in a pickup truck and took the dead goats away. And we don't know where it happened to
him. Wow.
Which I found very interesting.
Just watch the noise on your side, if you would, please.
And my dog is over here. I'm trying to get her out.
Oh, I see. I can't see you now.
There we go.
Yeah. How many of these stories, even going way back in the past, percentage-wise, just kind of a guess from you, but had an association with UFOs involved? Or some type of, you know, ball of light or whatever, where there were humanoids that actually, either turned up or actually, some type of association with that.
Well, I believe most of them, I would say maybe 80%, there were either some kind of UFO sighted, they were sighted in the UFO, next to the UFO, or near the UFO, or in the general vicinity where UFOs have been seen. Now there's either a ball of light or a saucer or a triangle shape, whatever type of UFO. But most of these cases deal with UFO encounters also.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't. That's really something. And have you yourself had a UFO encounter?
Yes, I have. Like I say, back in Cuba, the one I mentioned at the beginning.
I'm sorry.
Can you excuse me 1 second?
Sure thing. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right.
Moment.
That's all right. We're used to things happening on this show. So I think he has to move his dog or something like that. So if anyone in the chat room has questions, I will try to pose them to our guest tonight. If you want to put them.
Okay, I'm back. I'm very sorry.
Okay. All right, no problem. And
when I was in the Navy, I was in Europe a couple times in what they call Mediterranean cruise. I had a top secret clearance. I was a radioman on board a destroyer tender. And one day we were in Puerto de Mallorca in the Balearic Islands in the Mediterranean. We stopped there a lot. And one morning I was up on the deck, the ship, and I looked up at there were some hills and beyond the city, and I saw two like silver aircraft. They were not moving, they were just hovering there. And I grabbed one of the binoculars. I looked at it. I looked at them, and they just stay there. I couldn't tell the shape too well because they were very far away. And then all of a sudden, they just moved out and disappear. This is one while I was in the Navy. And I have other encounters, mostly when I was, a child. I had some weird encounters. Maybe some of them were not related to UFOs, maybe to other kind of entities. But I remember one time in walking to the hallway in my house, there was a mirror on the hallway. I looked at the mirror, and there was a man in the mirror staring at me. He looked like he had a beard, and to me, I thought he was wearing some kind of helmet that looked like one of those Spanish conquistador type of helmet back in the one the Spanish used to wear. And I remember, this is in Cuba, so I remember the Spanish were in Cuba a lot, and who knows, maybe what I saw was a ghost. I'm not sure. There was definitely nobody there with me behind me, so.
Wow. Now, a lot of these beings seem to communicate, and what would you say it was a percentage, or were there a lot of cases where there was some type of communication? When I was reading through, I saw where there were unknown languages and things like that. But
a lot of the communication is done telepathically.
Yeah,
they speak into the mind of the witness, or the witness hears them in their mind, and usually they speak in a language that the witness can recognize. Or if this, let's say you're in Spain, and they'll speak to you in Spanish. You're in the U.S., they'll speak to you in English. It all depends where you're at, but they do mostly communicate telepathically. There's been cases also where they speak, you know, like we're speaking now, but you can hear them. And sometimes there are others that do not communicate, or they speak among themselves in an unknown language. It all depends. It just depends on the encounter. It's just many different types of encounters, and I think there's many different type of humanoids or entities.
Right. I mean, it seems to be. What about how early has anyone described something that may sound like a gray, you know, basically a gray early alien?
Okay, if you're like a UFO historian like I am, if you look at the books, the early books, Passport to Magonia by Jacques Vallée.
Yeah.
And The Humanoids, Charles Bowen. If you read the accounts there, none of those accounts mention a human or a being that resembles a gray. Mm-hmm. Now, people say, well, there's people that have been abducted back in the 50s and even the 40s that describe gray-type entities. Yeah, a lot of these people remember those encounters, but they remember those encounters here now in the 90s or in the 21st century when they're either hypnotically regressed, or they all of a sudden they have they remember the encounter. I will say gray type humanoids were seen like in the late 70s, maybe 1975 on 76.
Wow. Okay, so yeah, I wondered about that, you know, and you mentioned just a little bit ago about the tall whites or something that kind of falls along that line.
The Nordic type.
The Nordic type.
Tall, yeah. Blonde, yeah.
Yeah. Any type of, consistencies in some of the sightings through different areas, you know, geographically? Or I know you said there's so many different kinds, but is there anything that was sort of a trend in any type of way that you're aware of?
Well, I know of cases that let's say have occurred in totally different locations, and let's say one in the Ukraine, one here in South Miami, and they're almost the same to a T, the same type of incident. And I say to myself, how could these witnesses, separated by thousands of miles and by 20 years, describe almost the same thing? There's this case in South Miami, back when there were only tomato fields down in South Dade, where a witness was driving down US 1 and he saw, like, he described a blimp type object descend over a field, tomato field. And a big, like, he said, looking at an elevator came down and from the object and the hatch opened and some cars started driving out. Cars. And these cars were just drove into the US 1 and just drove away. And he was here dumbfounded looking at it. Now, I'm talking 1991. How many years? Maybe 30 years or so after that. And the Ukraine. I don't have the case in front of me. A witness sent a case to researcher Anton Anfalov. He never heard of this case in South Miami. This case was only published by a newsletter here in Miami-Dade County. back in the 60s. I don't even know. I don't think it is even in the Humcat catalog. But anyway, this witness described seeing a cigar-shaped object over a field, and an elevator descended from the bottom of the craft, and cars started driving out of it. And these cars were, well, of course, the Russian vehicles or whatever vehicles they had back then in 91. But and then there's another case that was told to me by a Spanish researcher, J.J. Benitez. Oh, I don't know if you heard about his books, but from Mexico, almost the same scenario. A huge object, rectangular, descends over the field, and cars can come out of it. I mean, this kind of case, it sounds too high strange. I mean, it's, you take it or leave it. You be your own judge. That's what I say.
Yeah. Just watch the tapping on your side, if you would, please.
Sorry.
Yeah. I know it's you probably don't even realize you're doing it. Okay. So there was a case in Australia. I believe it was Australia, where the cars were driving down the highway and they saw these beings get out of a craft that landed. And it was quite a scary case. Are you familiar with that one? I was trying to find that, and I couldn't find it anywhere.
That's a case that occurred in 1993. What's the name of the witness? Kathy, I can't remember right now, but it was a scary case because the entities that were seen were very scary looking. They were like tall, black in color, glowing red eyes, and they didn't seem friendly at all. Witness, the main witness, there were other witnesses, but the main witness wrote a book about it, which I have. I have no idea where it is, and I can't remember her name, but I do remember the case that you're referring to. Yeah, it happened in August 1993.
Yeah,
in Australia.
Yeah, I'd like to look into that case more. There must be someone. I believe at one time I tried to reach out to her, whoever the witness is, and I was not able to find any contact information.
I know she wrote a book, and like I said, I don't have it in front of me right now.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to find it here in my laptop right now.
Oh, that's okay. And someone wanted to know in the forum, there's some questions in there. Had anyone actually reported anything with any creatures like with wings or something like that, really strange like that?
Oh, yeah, many cases, what they call winged humanoids or flying humanoids. They're all over the place now. They were not that common back in the day in the 50s. And then we got what happened in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, the Mothman. Some of the first winged humanoids that were seen there. In the 70s, not so much, but there were many, you know, cases here and there. Mm-hmm. They seem to come of age in the late 90s and the 2000s, and a lot of winged humanoid-type cases, even many of them related in connection to UFO encounters and all that. Yeah, many of them. I have many of those in all my, in my books and my files.
I know you talked earlier about abduction, or I heard you say a little bit about it. Were there a lot of, I'm saying back in history, were there encounters where people saw humanoids and then they were taken somewhere? Sound like an abduction?
Yeah, let me tell you what would happen a lot in the Middle Ages. People were claimed that they were picked up by strange entities or humanoids, and they were accused of being witches or warlock, and then they were burned at the stake. That happened a lot. There were people in England, Spain, that claimed they were taken through the air by strange creatures and deposited miles away where they were, and then there were the Inquisition will interview them, and they the only conclusion they could come up with was that they were in cahoot with the devil, that there were demons that did this. So maybe that happened a lot in the Middle Ages, but it wasn't understood, and the poor people that were abducted and were burned at the stake or worse.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's something else. And I'm just trying a couple of different things because I'm getting a message on my software that's saying that it says I have too many video settings on, and I don't have anything showing right here. I just want to make sure.
video setting. Okay.
Yeah, and I don't have anything that I am aware of up now. So hopefully things will clear up. We're still having some buffering issues. Anyway, okay, so let's continue. And a question in the forum. I'm not quite understanding this, but I mean, it sounds kind of interesting. Have you ever heard of cases where humanoids appeared to be two-dimensional? In other words, no depth, almost like a sheet of paper? I'm wondering if you meant like, kind of like what they call the shadow figures or something like that.
Well, I have heard of those. It's kind of different from a shadow figure. A shadow figure is some I've seen those. I have encountered them. And most of the time when you encounter one of these shadow figures, it's like the fear is incredible. For some reason, it's like you can't control yourself. But it looks like something like a human-shaped figure, blacker than the night, blacker than the room can be dark, but it's darker than the room. That's why you can see it. Incredible. But there's some substance to it. I mean, you can see it sideways or it moves. But some of these, that question, the three-dimensional, I have heard of cases in which people have reported entities or creatures that they look like flat. They're like flat. Maybe they're like a piece of paper. They seem not to have any, not to be three-dimensional. They only a couple of dimensions, two-dimensional. Mm-hmm. They turn around, they turn sideways, and all you see is a thin line. There's no depth. I have heard of those cases. They're not too common. I can't think of any on top of my head right now, but yeah, I have heard of those.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how about some that vanish? Do people talk about that?
Yeah, all the time. That it happens with UFOs. You're seeing right. A UFO hovering over the house, and you look up, it just disappears. You don't see it fly away. It just disappears. Same thing with some of these humanoid encounters. You might see a creature outside in the front yard or a creature in your bedroom that it suddenly appears there, and you try to get up, and all of a sudden it vanishes right in front of you.
Yeah.
Some of these entities are sometimes there's a flash of light, and some of these turn into a ball of light and just fly out the window. There's been some cases like that.
Yeah. Is there, I hate to ask this, but is there some music in your background? I didn't hear that earlier. Is it just in another room or something you can't do anything about?
Let me close the door. Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Hold on one second. But it's far away, and I'm surprised you could hear. Hold on one second.
Yeah, okay. That's fine. Yeah. All right, everyone, hang in there. He's going to be right back. Oh, someone hears a squeaky fan. That should do it. That should keep the dog out, too, I would think. And someone hears crickets. That's something you never want to hear in a show of any kind is crickets.
There we go.
There, you back?
Okay. The door was open, too. Maybe there were crickets outside.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
That's right. You're in Miami. Yeah, nice and warm. Yeah. So now one of the things I was thinking of is, you hear people that, say they're abducted today and they describe all the different types of creatures that abduct them. The grays, of course, being the most common or what you hear the most. Then there's the reptilians and there's the mantis type or, all these. And I'm not saying, I'm not saying I, sort of buy into any of this. I really don't know. I'm kind of on the fence about certain things like this. But when you're looking, doing this research, do you actually, find those type of beings?
Like I said, the almost 19,000 summaries, and they're all type of beings, reptilians. I had people. I talked to a woman here locally that in person I talked to her. She said she was in her home and and all of a sudden in her room, a female appeared, a woman, type of alien looking, but, still human looking. And what she spoke to her, all of a sudden her face changed into a reptilian type creature. And this really, of course, frightened her. And then she kind of backed up, and then this creature, whatever it was, just disappear, but it apparently morphed into a reptilian. But yeah, I have plenty of in cases of reptilians and all kinds.
Bobby, I'm not understanding your question, so rephrase that if you would. Can you describe to the listener out there what your format is in your books? Because I really like the way it's laid out. Can you just describe how you present an encounter?
Here's one of the books right here. This is Humanoid Encounters, 1970, 1974. It deals with cases from the 1970 and 74. There's like an anthology, a chronology. It's like a chronology of cases. I start from 2015. I have worked my way all the way down to ancient history. And what I do, I try to include as much detail as possible. I mean, many cases there were just brief, you know, anecdotes or information, but many of them do have a lot of detail, and I try to include that. Whenever possible, I try to include an image in the book also. And you know, a lot of the ones with more details are obviously cases that have been investigated by researchers, you know, worldwide. And like I say, many of them are translated. But all these books are like an anthology, a chronology of events through history or from, like I said, 2015. I haven't collected anything after 2015. I mean, for the year 2016, I haven't collected anything. But 2015 all the way down, and that's why I have so many books, 15 volumes. I mean, they're not that big, but there's a lot of information in them.
Yeah.
They're, you know, 300, over 300 pages. All of them are over 300 pages.
Oh, well, that's a fair size.
Yeah.
There was a question I'm trying to understand I'm asking, Bobby, rephrase your question in the chat room. I couldn't understand what you were saying. Let's see.
I found your Australian cases back on August 8, 1993. The lady's name was Kelly Cahill.
Okay, that's right. Yeah.
Kelly Cahill. She was driving with her husband and three children. They saw a huge craft hovering over the roadway, and there were lighted windows. They saw entities in the windows. Then they, these entities were like almost 7 feet tall, black in color, with glowing red eyes, red eyes, and it turned out to be an abduction scenario type of thing. So, very frightening case. Yeah.
Yeah. So, this is also in the forum a question. What is your opinion on the link between sleep paralysis disorders mistaken for alien encounters?
Well, you know, I suffer from that sometimes, and there is a possibility because sometimes you have like what you call that, you have that sleep paralysis and you can't move. But most of the time when you have that sleep paralysis, you don't see anything. You don't see any figures or creatures or anything like that. Rarely, when you have that waking dream that you wake up and then you think you saw something, maybe that's, some people think they saw some kind of entity in the room. I think maybe in some cases could be that, yeah. But if you see something substantial that stays around in your room and you're completely awake, you know you're awake. Maybe you're awake, but you're unable to move. You're paralyzed for some reason. You've been paralyzed, but you know you're awake. Your eyes are open. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's sleep paralysis. That's something different. That's like what I call bedroom visitations by, you know, unknown entities.
Yeah. My son has sleep paralysis now and then, and he said that he actually thought he saw, like, some type of dark figure. I have heard of something like that, but I don't think that's the case for everyone, you know, that especially when they're, you know, daytime, people are wide awake and, you know, there are some abduction encounters like that. Also driving and, you know, a whole different.
When you're wide awake and forget it, that wouldn't be, cannot be connected to sleep paralysis. And I saw the question from the young lady in the forum. She says she saw a hooded type being, black.
Yeah.
And for some reason, that type of entity is reported a lot also.
Really?
Related to, and mostly in cases where it appears in the bedroom. I don't know if it's evil or not. You know, some people think it is. Huh. I'm not here to judge. I don't know.
Yeah, it does sound evil, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it looks evil.
Yeah.
But
And have you ever researched the possibility of portals, you know, openings like
yes.
the Skinwalker Ranch?
A lot of cases there were entities. I was sent a case from up in the West, and maybe I think it was Arizona, maybe or California, not sure, where this hiker saw he looked like a portal hovering in midair. He said it like a window. He looked up, there was like a window in midair, and out of the window, just like the Skinwalker Ranch, this creature jumped out, a Bigfoot type creature. Now I think portals, or what I call interdimensional pathways, are used by a lot of these entities or humanoids to go or travel or go there or visit here. I think that's my theory. I'm not saying this that's what it is or it's true, that maybe they use other dimensions to travel, interdimensional travel. Maybe not even intergalactic travel, maybe interdimensional.
That's it for the free part of the show. Thanks so much for listening. If you'd like to support us and help us keep going for only $2 or more per month, just go to podcastufo.com. All the information's right there. And you get to listen to the whole shows, 2 hours long, plus all the archives in your media player or as you can on the website, podcastufo.com. So our guest next week is Preston Dennett. And also, just remember, if you want to watch the whole show for free, you can actually watch it live. Just go to podcastufo.com on Wednesday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thanks so much, and remember to keep your eyes to the sky.